Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. I'm your host, Alex Wolf. I am joined by Gavin Shaw, and we are going to talk about some Knicks stuff. So first off, Gavin was kind enough to host a solo show for Monday, which was very nice of him, after I went to the game on Super Bowl Sunday and then had to go to a Super Bowl party, all kinds of other junk. So Gavin took the reins. But in our first segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about my in-person Madison Square Garden experience in the 200 section.
And then we're going to get into Kristaps Porzingis' debut presser in Dallas. Maybe get some spite there from a little bit from both of us, maybe. I don't know. I might surprise some people. I might mix them in. Kristaps hinting that he's not going to take the qualifying offer. He's going to sign the max. Do we know? We're not sure. We'll break it down.
And then lastly, we're going to talk about Wes Matthews and some potential possibilities for him now that the Knicks have him and his expiring contract on the table, potentially for a trade. Maybe they buy him out. Who knows? There was tweets about it. We'll talk about that. And for those of you that are into such a thing, we will talk a little bit about the new Avengers spot that debuted during the Super Bowl. Easily the best part of that whole game. All that and more coming up on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in, everybody. He's Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex. He's Gavin. Talking Knicks. Talking Knicks live, because I got to go see them live. That was pretty fun in its own sort of way, because seeing the Knicks live, you know, it's cool. It's cool in its own way. My section started chanting, "We want Cantor," along with most of the building. I came probably the closest that I've ever come to, like, a violent outburst at a Knicks game and, like, you know, starting yelling things that might have gotten me thrown out. But I held my tongue because, you know, I was just trying to enjoy myself, make sure not to offend any children in the room. But we'll talk about that in a sec. I just want to take a quick moment to sort of promote our things that we're trying to do right now. So first off, we're going to do a trade mailbag for the trade deadline. Things have obviously drastically changed over the last week or so since we first started saying that we were trying to get this together. So it's sort of last minute-ish. So if you have trades that you want us to look at, send them to at Locked On Knicks on Twitter. Send it to LockedOnKnicks@gmail.com. Just send us a letter. Send us a smoke signal. Just make sure that it has the URL to the trade machine in your smoke signal. However you can do it, make sure to get us that, because we'll, you know, take some mock trades and break them down, you know, live for you guys. Hopefully in a two-parter, as long as we get enough. That way we can give you some on Wednesday, some on Thursday, a little bit of everything. Maybe sprinkle some news in there. And then lastly, we're going to try to do a new thing. We're going to call it Fan Fridays, or, you know, working title. But we're going to hopefully be able to bring one of you guys on with us on the show for one segment where you can sort of talk about whatever you want to talk about for 10, 15 minutes and all that. And hopefully we'll have a nice time together and then we can get you on air. So we're probably going to be doing that through Twitter. We'll be making sure to put out like an official announcement for that when we're going to do it. But we're thinking maybe the 15th this month or maybe the 22nd. We'll do our first show. We're not totally sure about what date yet, but we do want to do that because we'd like to interact with you guys. We already interact so much on Twitter and all that. Be really fun to actually, you know, get to talk stuff out with y'all on air. So yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything to say about that, Gavin, before we move on to my live experience?
I forgot the combination of numbers, but I think 5915205 is going to come from my throat in that, and I'm ready for it. I want to get him on first show. He's a real chance. Yeah. So basically, we're gonna predicate that. We're gonna make a post, and it'll be based up. You'll get to form an argument for yourself within Twitter's character limits for why you should get to go on the show, and it'll be kind of a Hunger Games style survival of the fittest each week. Everyone else gets pushed into like a pit of despair, but then you get a chance the next week or whenever we do it next to come back on. So we thought that would be a really good way to get a little bit more fan interaction and kind of get your personal history on how you became a Knicks fan, and then whatever hot take you have of the day or whichever one of us you want to challenge to a Knicks debate. I'm really excited for both of those.
I think you're going to have a lot of blood sport.
I know.
For the first couple weeks because of all your Kristaps takes.
I'm sharpening like my take swords. It's like I feel like I'm just like a gladiator. There's like 100 people lining up, all wanting to take me out right now. And Alex, you're going to be like, you're just going to be in the corner, like egging them on. You're like, get him.
I'm just going to be like, I'm just going to sit here. I'm just the ref. But we called no holds barred before this whole thing started. So I guess my job isn't much. We're excited about that though, guys. So keep an eye out. It's a new initiative, new something we're going to be doing. Hopefully you guys enjoy it when we get to it. But let me talk about myself for a minute. Let me talk about my experience going to the Garden on Sunday. It was pretty cool. Like I said, my section was chanting for Kanter too much. Very, very, very frustrating. I swear the one started in my section, the one chant, like the very first one. And that was extremely frustrating to me. But you know, whatever, people want what they want, I guess. I guess they like bad defense and hijacking the offense and not setting screens and all that good stuff, as long as there's points and rebounds attached. But that is what it is. But the game overall, I mean, I don't know how it was like watching on TV, but I was kind of encouraged by what I saw. When you're watching live, you sort of see stuff that you don't necessarily look for on TV, and you also miss stuff that you normally see on TV. I notice, like, so I find when I'm at a game live, I notice more like mannerisms and stuff, because for whatever reason, it's just easier. Like, you're looking, you can see the bench easier, stuff like that. So one of my biggest takeaways, I think, from that game was that I really enjoyed watching DeAndre Jordan, not just for how he was on the court, but also for how he was interacting with his teammates. And, you know, for a guy who literally just rolled into town. Well, I guess maybe they never left New York, but either, you know, from the game the other day. But either way, I mean, he's only been a Knick for like 24 hours and he already seemed really cool with his teammates and seemed to be having a good time. Was like 10 times more like huddle supportive and stuff than Kanter. On the court, he seemed more, you know, in tune with his teammates, I guess. So I don't know. I already find myself hoping that out of the two high-priced guys that the Knicks got back, like just for salary matching purposes, Jordan and Wes Matthews, I'm kind of hoping they keep Jordan just as like a locker room presence, especially because they're about to most likely either trade or waive Enes Kanter. But I don't know how – did that come across like on the broadcast, Gavin? Like, was that something that you really noticed?
Not like especially, but I almost like, I guess I wasn't even looking for it that much because I kind of assumed that of Jordan to a degree, which is weird because it was like – He looked like, I think like in some like distant version of 2K that I owned, I think I had DeAndre Jordan on the Knicks. So for one reason, it just kind of clicked in my mind that like, I'm like, oh, this is kind of normal. But yeah, he did seem like a great teammate. Like I thought one of my favorite parts was, I can't remember who it was. It was some one of our guards. It might have been Trier, but like someone just like took like a hard spill underneath the basket, and Jordan like thought he got fouled on the play, and he like wordlessly kind of sticks his like a giant hand behind him to like help the guy up while arguing with the ref. I'm like, oh, that's a good teammate. Like he's still thinking about the guy on the ground. So I did kind of appreciate that. And then I thought it was the other end was kind of exacerbated by Kanter thinking he was supposed to go in the game when Dennis Smith was called. I'm like, okay, this is it. That's kind of the last straw with this guy. Like it was both like, it was kind of funny, but like you could tell like Kanter was probably like a little bit pissed inside. And I was, in my mind, I was like, all right, this is final note as a Knick.
Yeah, they definitely, you know what? That didn't even click with me at first either. Like I legitimately thought that the Garden, like just based off how I was looking, like my perspective from where my seat was, and I had a pretty good view of the Knick bench. I don't know how I didn't really notice it, but all of a sudden everybody started cheering and I was like, oh, it's because Smith is coming back in. And I was like, yeah, I'm excited about that, too. And then, like, I saw something on Twitter or something about, like, oh, no, he said Dennis, not Enes. And I'm like, oh, motherfucker. Like, Enes got up because he thought that he was getting put in the game. Like, this freaking idiot. As if he would get put in the game anyway, even with Mitch out with the illness. That, I will say, that was easily my biggest regret for the day, was I didn't get to see Mitch Robinson live. because I was super looking forward to seeing him. And I didn't see, like, the tweet from the Knicks PR ahead of time that he was out with the illness. So the whole, like, first quarter, second quarter, I'm like, okay, like, Jordan was in. And then, you know, they put Cornette in. I'm like, come on, where's Mitch? And I thought maybe it was, like, a Fizdale statement at first. Like, hey, Mitch, like, we want you to just sit just for this game and just watch how DeAndre plays the game. Like, because that's a guy that we want you to really, like, study. And then I looked, like, I think I looked at halftime because I was like, nah, this is fishy. Like, Mitch has been playing, like, a steady, like, 15 to 20 minutes a game for the last, like, 2 weeks. And, yeah, I saw that he was sick. So I hope he's feeling better. But I was disappointed that he was not playing the game that I was there for. But yeah, it is what it is.
No, I think that I like, go to, at most, one game a year. And it's due to the generosity of my friend Tyler Prime and his mom, Donna. So shout out to Donna if she's listening. But again, like, he was out for the one game I went to, and I'm like, oh, this is like the one guy. If he's like, you want to see that guy in person who's just like a human pogo stick, like that would be the greatest joy of coming to a Knicks game. I do want to transition this, though, because I think it's a good opening into a basketball discussion. How do you think that center rotation kind of sorts out? Because obviously you feel like if DeAndre doesn't get traded or bought out, and doesn't sound like they're going to buy him out if they don't trade him, like, you figure he'd be a staple just based on seniority and the fact that, I mean, he's clearly the best option. And Fizdale, at least at this point, isn't opposed to playing the best guys, if they obviously are the best guys, even if it helps the Knicks theoretically win a game or two. But I'm interested to see if they kind of prioritize Mitch's development over having five out with Cornette. And I think you can make a compelling case that he's a better player anyways, though Cornette played really well against the Grizzlies. So what do you kind of think about that dynamic?
Yeah, I kind of think what's nice about Jordan is that Jordan, unlike Cantor, understands that, like, you know, DeAndre Jordan's in a contract year also, but he understands that the whole league has the book on him at this point. You know what I mean? So he could play 0 minutes the rest of the season and people would still sign DeAndre Jordan in the offseason because they know, like, who he is. They know what his skills are, and they know that that's not going to change whether he plays or doesn't play. Like, he hasn't really added anything to his game in probably, I don't know, 6-7 years. I mean, it's, you know, maybe he's perfected certain aspects of it, but he is who he is at this point. He's a defender. He's good, like, very close to the basket, not a good free throw shooter, good rebounder, all that stuff. You have the book on him. So I think, like, based off the fact that he seems to have a good personality about the whole thing and isn't going to be complaining if he doesn't get as many minutes or whatever, I would think, to me, the plan might be start Mitch, back him up with DeAndre in case, you know, in case Mitch gets in foul trouble or whatever, or just in general, just to keep that same sort of energy out there, and then have Cornette in there for other minutes as well. And maybe even run two of them out there at the same time at times, even though that's a little weird. Like, Mitch, you can sort of get away with it because with Mitch and Cornette, Mitch, like, has proved that he can chase guys around the perimeter a little bit. And he's not really as limited as most big men as far as that's concerned, which is really fun. You know, it's part of the whole lore of watching him is, like, all the 3-point line blocks and all that. So that's my theory. I think he's going to go back Fizdale to, if he doesn't start Mitch, I think the general idea will be, you know, have Mitch and Jordan sort of play, you know, like, one and then the other, you know, just so that you can have that sort of same energy out there. And that gives Mitch, like, some teaching moments to be able to watch a guy that is kind of the same archetype of what he is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What did you think of Dennis Smith in person? Because I personally, I mean, just watching at home, and I gave, like, a minute or two on it this morning, but I didn't really have a whole lot of time to get into it. I was pretty impressed with his decision making. I'm finished with 6 assists in only 26 minutes and just 2 turnovers, which, I mean, that's fairly solid ratio. And I really didn't think he forced anything. And obviously the jump shot wasn't falling and didn't really look particularly good, but you kind of remove that from the equation. I thought it was a pretty excellent debut from a guy that, again, I have my doubts about, but I like the way he played.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no X's and O's wizard, you know, and I'll fully admit that, but to my eye, I mean, it looked like he looked like a guy that didn't have a practice in yet that was coming in, you know, on 24 hours notice and being asked to start in a game. But he did really well in that respect. You know what I mean? Like, the numbers didn't really jump off the page, but I thought that he was decisive. Like you said, you know, I didn't see too much stupid stuff from him. You know, there wasn't too many, like, erratic passes and things of that nature. I liked some of his assists. I liked his first bucket. It was really nice. That nice little like reverse layup.
Yeah, that's sweet.
That was sick. He's definitely got that ability to like get to the hoop when he wants to. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that, because I think and I hope and I pray that maybe for the rest of this year, he'll be sort of like a super Emmanuel Mudiay. You know what I mean? Like that maybe he'll start taking some of those minutes from Mudiay, because I think that he's really like a better version of what Mudiay gives you, basically. Like he's Mudiay with a higher ceiling at this point. So hopefully he'll start eating into Mudiay's minutes, not so much into Frank when Frank gets back, which thankfully Fizdale, I forget who got the quote today. Might have been Bagley. I'm not positive. A couple guys might have gotten it, to be honest, if they were at practice or whatever. But he was already today talking about how he's excited to have Frank and to have Dennis and to get them playing together. So that's encouraging. You know, now that there's no more Tim Hardaway Jr. here, you can get a little more creative with that two guard spot, because really, like, you've got Dotson and Trier, but Dotson shifts down to the three and like small ball lineups a lot. And Trier, you know, is kind of like a bench guy and whatever. So, but yeah, to get back to Dennis Smith, I enjoyed watching him play. I thought he did about as well as you could expect for a guy coming in on 24 hours notice. They ran like some, you know, double screens for him and stuff like that. They just did some basic pick and roll, things of that nature. I mean, it wasn't anything too crazy. And then the only time where I thought that he looked kind of uncomfortable, and this is the same scenario where he was kind of uncomfortable in Dallas as well, obviously, was like at times when Trier was out there, Trier would be the guy taking the ball down the court. And I don't think Smith is like, I just don't think he really knows what to do without the ball in his hand a lot of times, especially on a brand new team that he's just learning. So those were the only situations where I looked and I was like, he looks a little lost out there to my eye. And maybe I was wrong, but that was about it. I mean, I had very few complaints for his first game. And, you know, we'll judge him on a harsher curve going forward, the more practice time and stuff he gets. But just for like very first day, it was about as good as I could have expected.
My biggest takeaway from what you just said is that Dennis, sling this wood in my pants, Smith Jr. is going to eat Boutier's ... minutes. But I did think he was pretty good defensively against Conley, at least in the first stretch of play. And I was listening to Nick's film school, and they had our guy on who was on this podcast whose name I'm forgetting. Now I feel horrible. Is it Spencer?
It was, Spencer, wasn't it?
Okay, I do remember his name. All right, great. Shout out to Spencer, because I think he's great, even though I just forgot his name. But he was talking about Dennis Smith, and he was actually like relatively impressed with how Smith has played for stretches defensively this year. And he thinks Smith, like, if he really wants it, like, just given his athletic attributes, has the potential to turn into a really, really good defender. And at least in my mind, like, his defense and his shooting are kind of his two swing skills. Like, some combination of those two at a certain level of competency are the difference between him being a long-term starter in the NBA or just kind of an athletic guy off the bench who is sort of a journeyman. And I guess that's going to be kind of what I focus on the rest of the season. But he started off super, super well on Conley, and then Conley ended up going off on Kadeem Allen when he came in. And then at that point, Conley was hot, and he ended up having a great game. But I did see flashes from him, and that's kind of what I'm going to look at going forward. Unless you have anything to add, Alex, I think we can wrap this first segment up and go on to the KP drama in Dallas.
Yeah, I'm ready to wrap it up, put a bow on it, give it away as our first segment, and then we'll come back and do another segment. So we'll be right back in just a sec. You're Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast.
Kristaps Porzingis, your favorite New York Knick of all time, judged by our Twitter feed, is now a Dallas Maverick. And he had his initial press conference in Dallas. He didn't really say a whole lot. He refused to comment on what exactly went down from his perspective. In terms of whether he made a trade demand specifically, whether the Knicks were shopping him, and he found out about it. Personally, as a defender of KP, as some of you know, I was very disappointed in that. I really thought we were going to get to hear his side. And I thought, like, if you're going to make all the vague Instagram posts, like, this is your chance to, like, actually expand on it. Maybe Mavericks PR and Cuban told him that was a no-go, but I would have liked to have heard something. And it was made all the funnier because Mark Berman, Berman of the Post, I made the trip all the way out to Dallas just for this press conference and didn't really get anything out of it.
Yeah, well, you know why he didn't say anything, right?
Go ahead.
because he realized he's going to get exposed as like a fraud for trying to like claim that there was some other thing here. Like he didn't ask for a trade or whatever. He absolutely asked for a trade. He got asked point blank, did you ask for a trade? And like, I don't care what Maz PR told him. If he wanted to be straight about it and like give us the truth, like he said on Instagram, then he would have just been like, yeah, I asked for a trade. I just wasn't happy. Like, why be weird about it? Why not just be straight about it if that's what it is? And at this point, who gives a shit? Because you're gone anyway. Like, it's not like you're going to hurt our feelings. It's not going to hurt anybody's feelings at the Mavs. Like, but you're right. He went through this whole, you know, this whole process of being like, the truth will reveal itself. It's like, shut up, dude. Like, the truth will reveal itself, my ass. Like, you didn't say anything. You're probably going to leak something to some other reporter. Your stupid ass brother is going to leak something to some other reporter. And, like, you know, try to shape the narrative to make you look better or whatever. Like, I'm completely over him at this point. I'm like, and look, like, I'm not the type of dude that would overlook past transgressions by the Knicks or whatever, because I understand that the Knicks have like a really shitty history of like PR and everything else. But everything about this situation screams that Porzingis is like hiding something, or like if he's not like hiding something, that he's just like flat out lying. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of over the whole thing at this point. Like, he can go practice, not play in Dallas for the rest of the year, whatever. You know, I wish him well. I'm not going to like wish bad on him, but I'm certainly not going to be like a closet Dallas fan now or something. Like, that's not going to happen. So, you know, whatever. I'm pretty much done with like the way that he's been conducting himself. I just think it's really unprofessional, and I think he's a stupid idiot. But to take that in a totally extreme direction, that's just where I'm at. But
I'm not like, gonna. He's just a fucking moron.
Yeah. No. I mean, the other thing too is, you know, and I know you got a different takeaway from this than I did, but he also was asked. First off, they gave Berman a hard time, which I felt bad for Berman because, you know, he got sent down there by the Post, and he probably didn't feel like going to fucking Dallas, but he got sent there. He asked his question, did you ask for a trade? And then they gave him like nonstop shit for it. And I'm like, man, you know, Berman, that's like our grandpa, man. Like, that's like, or like our weird uncle, you know, that's like, that's the Knicks fans is like weird uncle, you know, Uncle Berman. So don't mess with Berman. That's our guy. But he got his question off and Porzingis didn't answer that. And then he got asked, are you planning on re-signing in the offseason? And he was sort of like, well... And then Mark Cuban's stupid smug ass butts in and he's like, oh, I can answer that. And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, he's staying. He's staying. And then Kristaps kind of just gave like a yeah. And that was like pretty much it. And then someone asked again something about like, well, what type of contract are you going to sign? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then Cuban was like, just said again, like, he's going to be here a long time. And then Porzingis said something like, we're on the same page or whatever, which everybody then takes as like, oh, yeah, he's for sure going to sign like a 5-year max contract. I take that as personally like, haha, yeah, that's, we're going to figure it out. Because, again, why, from a dude that clearly seems like he's been lying for the last few days, would you take his word for anything at this point? So if he says, yeah, right now I'm going to do that, he might turn around in like 5 days and be like, no, I'm taking a qualifying offer and that's it. And that's what we're calling it. Or he might get some other team to swoop in and sign him to like a 2+1 so he can get out faster if he wants to. I don't know. I think that it seems to me like Porzingis and his brother at this point are just like really, really craving the experience of unrestricted free agency or something. And that's kind of their end goal at this point. But I don't know. I'll let you take it from here because I know your takeaway is a little different than mine.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think I do kind of agree with you that seems like at least at some point, like if not now, like that was Giannis's goal, like to get him into open free agency. But I guess my only response to that, and I'm not saying you specifically, Alex, because I don't even think we've gone like totally down this path, but I would just say in general, like a lot of the responses I've got in Twitter, and obviously like I'm way more pro Porzingis than you, for better or worse, most people would say worse, and I'm getting both like, oh, like he's 100% gonna sign the qualifying offer, like, oh, and his like legs are shot, like anyways, like why do you even want him? Like, and I was talking about this on the podcast earlier, like that's a reality to a degree, like he's not just a 7'3" guy who was very mobile coming back from a torn ACL. He dealt with 11 different lower body injuries over his 3 years on the Knicks. But my counter to both those things is, all right, you can't have it both ways. Like, if you're gonna argue that his legs are ruined like, or that, like, you just don't think it's likely that he's healthy for a long period of time, he would be more aware of that than anyone else. And that was kind of my case for, like, I think if the Knicks kept him, if the Knicks traded him, whatever team he ended up on, I don't think there's any world where he's denying that max. You don't, like, you don't just risk $158 million. I know we could say, oh, his brother's an idiot, he's going to manipulate him. And, like, maybe that's true to a point. But I just, like, I can't see it going that far down the road. Because at that point, the only person he's hurting is himself. And he's hurting himself literally by potentially giving up over $100 million. And I just, I can't imagine that. So that's the one thing I'll say. Like, I do buy that he's going to sign a max contract there. And, like, just purely from, like, a self-interest perspective, like, why wouldn't he? Like, you're not going to be better set up than the organization that's molded Dirk Nowitzki, your absolute highest possible fucking ceiling, best case scenario, and play with Luka Doncic, who looks like he's going to be one of the top five players in the NBA for maybe 10, 12 years running and is a genius of a passer. Like, it just, like, everything I think makes sense about him signing. That's why I think I'm not as dubious about it as you are. I know you're just doubting it on the premise that, like, he's, I mean, you correct me if I'm misinterpreting what you're saying, but that he's, like, he's just going to lie about everything, and that, or at least he has the potential to lie about everything. But I cannot imagine that he won't take the max contract with him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm just, my number one thing is I am not going to underestimate the hubris and, pardon me, the hubris and the stupidity of particularly Giannis at this point. I really think that he's, like, the puppet master here. I sort of, I don't know. I don't want to, I'm thinking about how I want to phrase this, but, like, I almost kind of feel bad for KP in a way, because I feel like this is one of those situations where he might, like, he respects his brothers so much, obviously, and they're, like, so, so close. But I wonder about the advice that his brother's giving him at this point. And I hope that he doesn't give him advice that, like, actually ruins his career. Like, you know, as much as I'm not really pulling for him much anymore, I also don't want him to, like, be flamed out just because his family member was an idiot. But I don't know. I guess time will tell. Like, you know what? We could both discuss this till we're blue in the face, and neither of us will actually know what's going to happen until we hit July 1st. And then, you know, the fireworks are going to go off in one way or another. We're going to either be, one of us is going to be vindicated, and the other one's going to be like, well, I guess I could have never really ruled that out, because really everything's on the table right now.
That might be the end of the podcast. We might have to earmark our final episode. That could be it. If July 1st intersects with a Fan Friday, I think we're gonna have to cancel the Locked On Knicks podcast from that point going forward, because it's gonna be a war. However that
well,
goes.
I'll tell you what. If you want to duck out, you're welcome to. But if the Knicks sign Kevin Durant or something, this podcast is going to go insane. There is no way I would leave on July 1st.
Well, that's why I think there's a lot of upside in my position, because either I'm proven right, and if I'm proven wrong, I got Kevin Durant on my team. And that's like, I want to state something clear, because, like, people have, like, at least, like, on Twitter, I've been saying, like, oh, like, you're, like, not a Knicks fan. Then, like, I'm just, like, I'm genuinely trying to be as objective as I can. I might be 100% wrong, but this is how I see it. Like, I want the Knicks to get Kevin Durant. I want to be proven wrong. I want Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on this. I'd give up a limb for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to be on this team next summer. That would be incredible. Based on the Knicks history, I'm not super duper confident it's going to happen, but I think you're absolutely right, Alex. We could talk about this forever, but we're not going to know until July 1st, so we might as well table it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it just kind of is what it is at this point. My only other thing that I would say to you, just, and I mean, we'll discuss this another time, and maybe we can even make a whole nother little segment about this at some point, but, like, the thing about the cap space this summer too, is that it's not that it just gets you your shot at free agents this year. It's that you could just do, at the very worst, you could do the Lakers model, and, like, the Knicks own all their picks, like, from now until forever. So if you miss on a big free agent this coming summer, then just sign a bunch of guys to overpriced 1-year deals like the Lakers have been doing, and just kind of roll with those vets, like, get good vets, you know, no Enes Kanters, no guys that are going to, like, complain, get good vets that will just kind of play their part while you develop your young players. Suck it up for another year, whatever, get another high draft pick. At a certain point, hopefully you hit on enough draft picks that then you become sort of like Philly. And then, you know, your homegrown talent will then attract other talent or give you the opportunity to trade for other guys down the road. I mean, I know that, like, Porzingis could have been part of that, and he definitely, I would have preferred to have him be part of that. But I mean, if that wasn't in the cards, I think they did about what they could have done. You know, got us now to the point where there's 7 first round picks in 5 years. I don't know. I feel pretty good about the trade just from that perspective of, like, I don't feel like the future was destroyed. I just think that we're taking a different future. Maybe we're sort of like doing like what's rumored to happen in the new Avengers that we'll talk about in a minute. And we're like time traveling down a different path or something. You know what I mean? Maybe there's a path where Porzingis is on the Knicks, but we're on the timeline where he's not. Maybe this is the better one. Who knows? I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess my counterpoint to that, and again, like we could do 45 minutes on this, but we did that podcast already, so I don't want to go too far, is I would just make the case. And I mean, again, this really comes down to like whether you believe like the Porzingis situation was salvageable anyways, because if you believe it isn't, which I think the majority of people listening do, then I think you're absolutely correct. And like this was like the best course of action, and like it gives them some flexibility and they could work with it. But if you think like there was some world, and again, like I've referenced this on Twitter, but there are examples in NBA history of teams and players, excuse me, being extremely acrimonious with each other and figuring out, like Kobe Bryant was like demanding a trade on the Lakers in 2007. He was saying, I want out, like no conditions, like get me the fuck out of here. And they figured out a way to win 2 titles with them. Like, obviously, like usually it doesn't work out that way. So like to your point, but I guess my concluding point on that would be, is the reason I'm saying it's Durant and Kyrie, like as like an all or nothing proposition, is if you don't get those guys, then I just think the odds of you replicating, if we're going to stick with the Avengers analogy, a timeline that is as promising as having Porzingis on this roster is very unlikely, because you look at those 2 Mavericks picks, and like I don't think anyone's arguing this, like they're likely to be in the teens or maybe even more likely in the 20s. The average return on that guy, and this is just NBA history, is a chance at having a rotation player. Like if you get one good role player out of 2 of those picks, you've done pretty well. And that would be awesome. Like the Knicks could use a couple of those guys, but that's not the potential of a Kristaps Porzingis. And I can go on and on and on, but I'll cut myself off there. That's it for me on this segment.
I will just close by saying that I am not for certain that those are going to be in the teens or dare I say the 20s. I actually think it's very unlikely that those picks would reach the 20s. My biggest thing, all right, I'm going to try to like time myself to like 30 seconds or less for this, because I don't want to ramble about it. But my biggest thing with those picks is that even if Doncic and Porzingis turn into like all-star caliber players together, do you know how many teams in the West have 2 all-star caliber players and can still barely sniff the playoffs? Like, I really don't think those 2 by themselves would do it. And then you got to look at Mark Cuban and his shit track record of attracting free agents, because like I think by and large Cuban is viewed as kind of a dick, like in the NBA and by free agents and stuff, because it doesn't seem like very many free agents ever choose Dallas over anywhere. Like DeAndre Jordan, to our point, like literally had the contract signed with them at one point and decided to go back to the Clippers. Like they're not a super attractive free agent destination for whatever reason. Maybe that changes with Doncic and Porzingis. Who knows? Maybe it doesn't, though. And if it doesn't, then maybe the Knicks are getting, you know, lottery picks with these better odds. Even if they're like 13, 12, whatever, your odds are higher still now of getting a higher pick with the new odds, even if you're that far down in the lottery. So there's always a shot. That's how I'll close on that. I'm just going to wrap this up. I'm not even going to give us a chance to get into another thing here, because we could go on forever. And I'm sure that we will sometime soon, probably during the trade pod, because God knows once we start talking about trades again, we'll start going crazy. So we'll be back in just a minute. We'll talk a little bit about Wes Matthews and the Avengers and all that stuff. Hopefully make it kind of brief, because we've rambled on for this middle part for quite a while. So we'll be right back. Welcome back in to Locked On Knicks. Last segment here. Going to talk a little bit about Wesley Matthews, who might be short-lived as a Knick, because it seems like the Knicks are trying to flip him right on out of here, probably, hopefully, for some sort of asset. Maybe potentially buy him out and let him go find a contender to latch on to. But I'll just present the news here. It was from Mark Stein, who's now with the New York Times, which is still strange. Thanks, Woj, for kicking him out of ESPN. Mark Stein says, the Knicks are exploring the trade market for Wes Matthews before Thursday's 3 p.m. deadline, league sources say. but there are also several anti-suitors hoping Matthews makes it to the buyout market. Among them, Houston, Oklahoma City, Toronto, Philadelphia, and yes, Golden State. So, yeah, I mean, most of those teams are not a team that you're going to be able to make a deal with if you're the Knicks. Houston, in particular, I know, because Matthews makes a lot of money this year. He makes $18.6 million. His cap hit is actually the same as Enes Kanter's is this year, I think, to the dollar. So he's making quite a bit of money. Houston doesn't really have anybody that they could trade that would match up evenly for just like expiring money for the end of the year, which the Knicks, obviously, with all this Kyrie and Durant hoopla, are trying to keep all that cap space. Like, that is pristine. You know, you can't touch that. Oklahoma City kind of in a similar boat. Toronto, Golden State. I mean, Philly is probably the only team you can really look at and be like, yeah, they've got a few guys that, you know, they could potentially move. Wilson Chandler, maybe. Trying to think who else they have. They have just a couple kind of like younger guys, too. You know, they have Zaire Smith. They have, what's his name, Korkmaz. Guys like that they could kind of throw in to make things work. If they're worried about losing Wilson Chandler in the minutes that he gives them, the Knicks could potentially use Noah Vonleh to make that trade. Or they can't, because they can't combine him with Wes Matthews like on the books, but they could maybe do something on the side, you know, trade him in a separate deal to make that work, just straight up for one of the younger guys or something. But, you know, and maybe get a second round pick or something, because Philly still has like, they're pretty much out of extra first round picks, but they have enough second round picks like for three teams still at this point. So they could probably send one or two of those over. But I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Gavin. I'm just kind of hoping, I would prefer not to buy him out, I think, if I could avoid it, just because I hate doing that. But if that's really what it does, and it gets them like, you know, GM to agent brownie points or whatever, I'm always down for that too. So I could kind of see it from both sides there, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
You know, Alex, I think this is a prime opportunity for the Knicks to acquire every disappointing point guard in the 2017 draft and officially trade for Markelle Fultz. You could just throw him, DSJ, Nil Aquino, all out on the floor at the same time. Maybe all their weaknesses cancel each other out. Maybe all their strengths cancel each other out, and you kind of have the ultimate like three-headed tank engine. I don't know, just a world of possibilities, and I think it could be a lot of fun. But in all seriousness, like, I think the Knicks should maybe shoot for the sky initially with Philly and say, like, look, we'll throw you Wesley Matthews, we'll throw you maybe the top 10 protected Dallas pick, and you can give us back Zaire Smith, who is out for the season due to like some severe allergic reaction he had. I never got the full story on that, but Zach Lowe, I know, mentioned that as kind of the reason on his podcast. He would be a guy that I'm really intrigued by, just as sort of a potential 3-and-D player down the road. Super freak of an athlete, really good defensively. One of those guys who was quite raw in college, but there are a lot of components there to be like a really, really nice player. Like, I almost think of him a little bit. He's not as good of a shooter, but kind of similar to Terrence Ferguson in Oklahoma City, where like you don't necessarily know what you're getting, but the upside is so high that it's like worth kind of taking a swing on. So I think it'd be interesting to use Matthews and maybe another one of the assets you got in that Porzingis trade and package them together into something that could be a little bit more immediately impactful than like a top 10 protected, potentially 2023, 2024 first round pick. So that would kind of be the direction I would go with it. My main goal is that he just doesn't get bought out and end up on Golden State, because that would just piss me off.
Yeah, I certainly don't love that option. Like I said, I mean, I can only appreciate it from the stance of like, you know, you got to do these sort of little things to like grease the wheels with agents and stuff. Like, Wes Matthews' agent would probably appreciate, like, and Wes Matthews himself would probably appreciate, like, if they got past the trade deadline and he's still on the Knicks. Like, I'm sure he would be a good soldier and see it out, because he seems like a pretty cool dude. He doesn't seem like a head case or anything, but you'd probably get a lot of brownie points with, you know, his agency and with him and everything else if you shipped him. Or rather, if you waived him and let him go to another team. But yeah, I certainly hope. I mean, to bring up, I know you're mostly joking, I would have totally brought up Markelle Fultz. But the crazy, crazy part now is that, like, that would really screw up the Knicks cap space at this point, because Markelle Fultz gets paid a lot of money because he's the top overall pick. Right. So I would actually be like fully off board with that. And if you would ask me like at the beginning of the year, like, oh, do you want to like buy low on Markelle Fultz this year? I'd be like, fuck yeah. Like, sign me up, man. Like, I would love to do that. Like, Markelle Fultz looked like he really could have been a good player. All you got to do is like figure out his shooting form and all that. And now he's had the thoracic outlet syndrome taken care of, which, by the way, is a pretty nasty injury. That's like, that ends pitchers' careers in baseball a lot of times. It's like this weird thing where like your shoulder like impinges on your vein or whatever and like makes your arm numb and stuff. It's kind of sounds kind of achy. But yeah, at any rate, like I hope they can trade him. If they don't, I'm not going to like lose sleep over it. Like he was just salary filler, you know, like if you can flip him for something, then that's found money. If you don't flip him for something, then whatever. But I do like the idea of, like, if you do flip him for something, then that kind of just counts towards the Porzingis trade in the future. Maybe we draft, if you get a second-round pick, maybe you draft another Mitchell Robinson with that, and then all of a sudden it's looking like the Melo trade. We're like, oh, well, you know, we got Enes Kanter and Doug McDermott, but the big prize of that one was getting Mitchell Robinson with that second-round pick because he looks like he's actually going to be, like, a really, really good player. But, yeah, I don't know. That's basically, I feel like I've already given this way more thought than it deserves, because if they trade him, they're going to trade him, and it's probably just going to be a meager return. But I don't know. I hope they do. I certainly hope that they can find a home for him. He certainly didn't do himself any favors with how he played on Sunday. He was god awful. But yeah. Oh well.
But you know what? We did the basketball BS. We did 45 minutes of it. James Marceda, if you're listening, it is time to shut the podcast off or throw some earmuffs on, because we are talking the Avengers Endgame spot. Opening commercial, the Super Bowl. I didn't even realize till today that it played, because I missed the opening drive because I was late to my Super Bowl party. But it was awesome. I loved watching it. It was just like 30 seconds. I don't know if you have any hot takes off that, Alex, but I loved, like, which is funny because this is what I hate in DC, but I really enjoyed like how grounded it was, and that like Captain America, Chris Evans, Steve Rogers, whatever you want to call him, it's just that like this emotional support group. And it's funny because, again, like DC goes to those same like kind of dark overtones, but with Marvel it's so earned, because they've been doing, like, especially like of late, like all these like really comedy bitty oriented movies. Like even the first round of Avengers Infinity War, like that was like so much of the strength of that movie, even though there were some like genuinely heartbreaking moments and obviously the great action scenes, like so much of it was predicated on its humor. And like Thor Ragnarok before that was all humor, and then you're going from that to just like this depressing Leftovers-esque version of the Avengers. Like I was really into it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the trailer. I mean, my initial take on it was, I was like, oh, that was underwhelming. But then I was like, I'm grateful that it's sort of underwhelming, because I hate when trailers give away too much about the movie. And I think that they've done a good job with that, with not giving away too much, to the point that even like in some of the Avengers Infinity War trailers, they even had scenes in there that didn't even make the final movie that, you know, kind of threw you off, because you were like, oh, like there's that one scene where everybody was like running towards the camera, like Captain and, you know, Black Widow and Hulk and all that. And obviously Hulk doesn't come out for the whole rest of the movie once you actually watch the movie. So like that was a scene that was not actually in it. Yeah, I thought it was neat, though. I mean, I like the melancholy. I like that they're setting this up. Like, the first trailer was, like, quite frankly, pretty depressing, too, up until just the little comedy teaser at the end with Ant-Man. But, yeah, I like it. I was, you know, it's about what I wanted. There's going to be probably one more full-length trailer between now and April, and that's all I want. Like, I don't want anything more. It's the same thing with Captain Marvel at this point. I feel like I've seen enough out of those trailers that I'm like, don't spoil anything else for me. Like, I don't want to know more about this movie before I go see it.
I love that Captain Marvel is just like a month before. Like, it's just like a little appetite. It's almost like you're going to see like two parts of the same movie, even though obviously like they're in like completely different like points in the timeline. But I love how you get like a little appetizer usually with these movies. Like, even if it's like Avengers versus like Ant-Man or something, like you have to wait like a few months. Like this, like you get that little bit of hype, and then you get to go right into Endgame. And
well, kind of like what they did with Black Panther last year. It's like, but like even a little more so, because last year
was like half a year though, like of different.
I think no, it was 2.5 months. It was Black Panther was like second week of February, and Avengers was April 27th. So okay. It was like 2.5 months.
Remembering that, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do. I do like the idea of like dealing with like the real world like implications of the snap. Because I don't think Thanos thought about this. I don't think most people think about this when they're watching. But you got to figure, like, I mean, his whole thing was like half the universe. Like, he definitely killed like 70% of people on Earth, because you got to figure, like, all the hospitals are going to break down right away with like half the doctors disappearing, like some of them in the middle of surgery. There's going to be a ton of car crashes. A bunch of flights are going to crash. And you saw the helicopter like right at the very end of Infinity War. Like, infrastructure is going to fall apart all over the place. There's going to be like mass suicides. So it's not just like the initial 50%. Like, you're losing like the majority of Earth. And this is like, I think, like, at least most of the consensus amongst most people, this is like 2-3 years in the future. Like, that's like a dark timeline, even beyond the initial 50%.
Yeah, I've been thinking it would maybe be like a year, so that they almost put you in the shoes of like, because it's been a year since the movie came out, you know, like that they're maybe operating on that sort of timeline. But either way, like, yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's going to be a significant jump ahead in time. And then maybe if like everything I've been reading online is correct, it's going to be some jumps back in time, and then maybe even forward in time, because they're apparently going to like time travel in this movie, if the rumor mill is to be believed. But I don't know, that could happen, could not happen. It would certainly make sense, though, and that would be pretty dope if they did some like time traveling and stuff. But because I'm a sucker for time travel stories, I would be totally into it.
We got to talk about it, as I love time travel, is far and away my favorite genre.
I smell a new episode of Locked On Knicks in the off season, where we do like time travel moments. If you could like butterfly effect certain Knicks moments and then try to figure out what life would be like now if those things had happened.
That would be, I'm 100% in. This is a deep cut, and I'm sure the majority of people have turned off the podcast already, but did you see the movie Project Almanac? Because I just rewatched that, and it was actually like sneaky good time travel movie.
I did not see that movie, but I always thought it looked intriguing, so maybe I'll check it out. My like go-to time travel movie that I found to be pretty fun, even if I didn't totally agree with their views on time travel, was Looper. I really liked Looper.
I was really into Looper. I got to see, there are some like classic ones that are like 12 Monkeys that are apparently very, very good. And there's one really good one that I keep hearing about that I haven't seen. It was like the early 2000s seemed like it was the peak of time travel movies. But anyways, we've probably gone on far too long with this. I'm just going
to
wrap
this
up.
Real quick. Best time travel movie of all time, Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2.
You know, I never got into the Back to the Future. And like, that's not an indictment on them. One of my biggest things is like, my biggest blind spot is like, there are so many classic movies I haven't seen. So I have to, I've seen bits and pieces and I've always enjoyed it. So
Watch them like one after the other. If you're into like Star Wars and like Marvel and stuff, you'd be into it. It's just the same scratch.
Sure. Okay. All right. I promise you I will do that. I was going to wrap this up, and if you want to have any comments on them, Alex, because we've already gone way too long, so I think a little more can't hurt. A very quick overtime section on the 30-second Avengers trailer. Just like three quick notes that I saw in the movie, that are in the trailer, that I really enjoyed. Nebula and Tony Stark, just like that one cutscene of them working on the ship, presumably, that they're on. I thought it was very reminiscent of the first Iron Man movie, and is this like probably Robert Downey Jr.'s last time in an Avengers movie or in any kind of Marvel movie. I thought that was pretty cool. Thor maybe on Thanos' farm, not sure, would be cool. And then like the single like shot that got me the most was Cap like strapping his shield back on, because I won't take credit for this. I watched like an IGN video on it. They were talking about like how he'd gotten like the new shield where it was magnetic. And this is like, to your time travel point, like that was like the old shield with the strap, and his hand is kind of shaking, so you get the idea this is maybe his final stand. Obviously, a lot of people, spoilers, think Chris Evans is going to die in this movie. So I thought that was pretty cool. Those are the three little things that stood out to me in this trailer as we wrap up this overlong podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are kind of the three, like, money shots of the whole thing. That plus that overly dramatic, like, single-file line shot with the sun coming up behind them or whatever, too. But, yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it. I think we should probably wrap up at this point.
Not a bad idea. Considering no one's listening, it can't.
Yeah, I hope you guys all enjoyed your extra 10 minutes of Marvel Cinematic Universe podcasting, though. So, but yeah, we'll wrap up for today. So be sure to, you know, rate us and give us 5 stars and all that stuff. What else should they do, Gavin?
They should tell their smart speaker, if you have one, to play Locked On Knicks. And one final reminder, again, we are doing that trade mailbag pod. I think either Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember if we're going to do it beforehand, right? And then we're going to react after. So we'll, regardless, you will have that this week. And then we are also starting Fan Fridays, and we will likely make a post to that regardless of whether we're doing it next week. We'll probably make the post next week so you can state your case to be on the podcast if you want to. Anyways, go ahead.
Just one last thing, just for the trades, try to get them in by tomorrow night, or we're recording on Monday night, by Tuesday night. So tonight, try to get them in by tonight, because we're going to try to record, you know, tonight for the trade bag. We might do a two-parter in one shot if we have enough. So be sure to get those in so you don't miss the cut, because we definitely want to get to as many mock trades as we can. And mock trades are fun, and I enjoy doing them very, very much. So, yeah, with that, we'll wrap up for today. Gavin, you could take us out. You were in the throes of taking us out, and then I pulled you out of it.
Yeah, no, you can't. It's a tough look. All right, we really appreciate you guys listening. Again, we'll be back tomorrow. It's going to be a mega trade pod. You won't want to miss it. You should do everything you can to be a part of it. So we'll talk to you then. Peace out.